Our text today is James 4, verses 13 to 15. I'm going to begin reading at verse 1. What causes quarrels and fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? You desire and do not have, so you murder. You covet and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. And you do not you ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly to spend it on your passions. You adulterous people, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend with the world makes himself an enemy of God. Or do you suppose that it is to no purpose that the Scripture says, he yearns jealously over the Spirit that he has made to dwell in us, but he gives more grace? Therefore it says, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Submit yourselves therefore to God. Resist the devil, and he'll flee from you. Draw near to God, and he'll draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. Be wretched, mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will exalt you. Do not speak evil against one another, brothers. The one who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks evil against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you're not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is only one lawgiver and judge, he who is able to save and to destroy. But who are you to judge your neighbor? Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we'll go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you're a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. Now, we have numerous presuppositions at work all the time about life and how life works, and we use them all the time. We tend to think that we're autonomous, that we get to call our own shots. And unless we're seriously ill, we tend to think that we'll still be alive a year from now. We think we have lots of time. We make our plans on the basis of our presuppositions. Well, James has something to say about that. Verse 13, come now, you who say today or tomorrow we'll go into such and such a town, spend a year there, trade and make a profit. Well, our lives are full of plans like that. We strategize and organize. We lay out vision and tactics and all that. It's done in the professions. It's done in the trades. We even do it for a vacation or for recreation. You name it. 50 years ago, when I was a house painter, we had to plan. We had to plan around the weather a lot. Most of the winter, we had to be inside. You can't paint when it's 20 degrees outside. And the rest of the year, we had to allow for rain and things like that. We were painting a small barn one time. I think maybe four or five of us were on the job. And an unexpected thunderstorm came up very quickly, and we were painting with latex paint. A good bit of the paint got washed off the barn, and there's green river running down the driveway. You got a plan, but sometimes your plans go awry. And we also had a plan for wasps and bees and other critters. Kenny, my partner, was working. He was on a fully extended 32-foot wooden ladder on the side of a church. And the church, you've seen some of these roofs where these buttress things comes out, you know, it extends the rafters out onto the soffit area. Well, it was like that. So he goes climbing up, gets his brush to start to paint, and he sticks his hand up in there on the other side of a buttress where he didn't really look clearly, right into a massive wasp nest. He never let go of the ladder, but I don't think he touched a rung the whole way down. Fastest descent of a 32-foot ladder I've ever seen. Now, part of our planning process was to walk around the building and look for nests. Now, I don't know what happened that day. Either we forgot to look or we missed that one. I don't know how we would have missed it. It was a really big one. But we got a plan. So what plans do you have for tomorrow, this week, this month, this year. We're constantly planning, setting aside time and money for certain events. These events, some of them are, we would say, are absolutely necessary. Others we consider very important. Some just fun, but yet we still got a plan. So there's plan upon plan. It's how we live our lives. Are those things that you've planned actually going to happen? James is not saying that it's wrong to plan. We must do so. But what he's getting at is how we plan. It's what our heart attitude is about when we're making plans. Not to plan based on these verses would be extremely irresponsible. It's not James's point. If we were going to have a work day, say here at church some Saturday, and we announced it and all of you show up, and then we get down in the basement, I get you all together, and I say to you, well, what would you like to work on today? I think most of you would probably turn around and walk out. It would be total chaos. We wouldn't have the tools, we wouldn't have the materials, and no real plan to get anything done. It can't work that way. A work day needs to be planned, people assigned, materials gotten, and even then, with the best of plans, sometimes they can get out of whack because there's something was forgotten or a new thing comes up. We can't live without making plans. Some of you have been to our cabin in New York. We bought it about 40 years ago. It was a trailer with two beat-up old rooms built on the front of it. And over the years, we've added rooms, tore down walls, but we never had a master plan. The best plan probably would have been to tear that old thing down and start from scratch, but we didn't. So we built without an overall plan. It progressed as need demanded. Another kid got married. Well, let's put a room on for them, you know, and that sort of thing. And it developed, and it's still somewhat of a work in progress. So there's no master plan, but there is functionality. There's a roof over your head, and the water works usually. James warns us about our planning, especially the attitude with which we do it. 13 again. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we'll go into such and such a town, spend a year there, trade, make a profit. Verse 14, yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. Have you ever had to change your plans because of a flight or an appointment was canceled? Maybe a road or bridge was closed. Someone got sick or died. Sometimes our best laid plans have to be scuttled because things change. Unforeseen things happen that catch us off guard. James tells us the harsh truth. You do not know what tomorrow will bring. Now, he uses merchants as an example here in the text. But he's not speaking just to the merchant class. He's talking to all of us. King Saul, for instance, had been rejected by God. He couldn't get an answer concerning what to do. Listen to what we read in 1 Samuel 28. When Saul saw the army of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. And when Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him, either by dreams or by Urim or by prophets. Then Saul said to his servants, seek out for me a woman who is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And the servant said, behold, there's a medium in Endor. He didn't know what to do. He couldn't get an answer from the Lord. So he turns to a medium. And he wants the medium to call up Samuel. That was a very wicked thing to do. But he was in an impasse. Yeah, he needed counsel beyond himself, in his planning, where to go, what to do, should I attack, all of those kinds of questions. But he never should have used a medium. Well, Samuel does indeed appear, scares the wits out of the medium, and predicts defeat of the army and death of Saul and his sons tomorrow. Remember when Joshua and the Israelites were first coming into the land, They had the Battle of Jericho, a great victory that the Lord won for them. Well, the next battle was against, now I was taught to say it, Ai. But then I've, in looking around, some people pronounce it I. And then I heard another one just this past week, Ai. So I don't know which it is. That city of two letters, Ai. they fully expected to win that dink little town after the great victory at Jericho. They go run over that place, didn't even send the whole army. But they were defeated. Their expectation didn't come to pass. Joshua and the whole nation were stunned. What happened? Well, they didn't know until God revealed it to Joshua. There was sin in the camp, and it had to be dealt with before God would again grant them victory. Now, who would have planned for that? They expected God to bring them victory after victory. It was certainly an unexpected change in their plans. They didn't know, and therefore their plans were interrupted. Sometimes, actually many times, things unfold just as planned. No glitches, no twists, no turns. But other times, things may end up quite different. Remember a few weeks ago when a woman plowed into the group of construction workers on the Beltway? 6 guys were killed. No one planned for that. It wasn't just their day that it was upset. There are lives turned upside down by that unexpected event. On Friday, September 22nd, 1963, I was in a study hall in the cafeteria. I don't remember what I was working on. When radio newscasts started coming over the school PA system, President Kennedy had just been shot in Dallas. His life ended, and the events of that day ended up being drastically different than what anybody had planned the day before. Now, most of you will remember 9/11, same kind of thing. On a much larger scale, the whole country came to a screeching halt. Airports closed, planes grounded, schools closed, after-school activities canceled. People sat at home in front of their TV watching the news. The plans for that day were drastically changed. Now everyone sat in doubt and fear, wanting to see if anything else was going to happen. We didn't know. And those who acted like they knew, I think a lot of us wondered, can we really trust what they're saying? Do they know? And then the occasional military jet flying overhead didn't help us build confidence that anybody knew. All of us have had our plans interrupted in one way or another. Sometimes it creates great difficulty. Other times, it's just no big deal, just a change. But our plans couldn't be carried out either way. Now, sometimes wonderful, unexpected things happen that may change our day or maybe the rest of our lives. Paul Tripp tells a story of his mother. His folks were vacationing in the Southwest and came to this beat-up little store out in the country. It was kind of a thrift store, flea market, and antique store all mixed up in one. And his mother found this ring that she really liked. Bought it for like $40 or $50. And when he got home, she went to the jeweler just to have it appraised, just to see if it was actually worth anything. And to her astonishment, it was extremely rare. Not the stone, but the setting around the stone. It was done by some famous guy from somewhere. And the appraiser said it's worth at least $50,000. She had no plan to search for rare jewelry that day. They were on vacation. But there it was. Sometimes good things just pop out of nowhere. Now, the fact that we don't know what will happen is not always a bad thing, because unexpected things happen, both good and bad. And I'm often amused by the news reports when the reality is either better or worse than what was expected. I mean, how many economic type reports, it was worse than expected, it was better than expected. Why even bother make the prediction if more often than not, it's better or worse than what you anticipated? So point is, we don't know what's going to happen. Solomon summed this up quite well in Proverbs. The heart of a man plans his way, but the Lord establishes his steps. We can make our plans all we want, but we have no guarantee that they'll come to pass. The Lord will, in fact, direct our steps. So what's James' answer to all of this? He says, what is your life? For you're a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. Did you get that? What is your life? You're a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Now, in the grand scheme of things, our life here on earth is indeed minimal. Very few make it to 100 years old. Life expectancy here in the United States is now 76. It's down from 77, probably because of COVID over the last couple of years. But 76, yikes, that's what I am. As far as we know, there is no one alive now who was born in the 1800s. Now, there could be somebody tucked away in India somewhere that's 125, but we don't know of anyone that was born in the 1800s. It was in 1492 that Columbus sailed the ocean blue. That was 531 years ago. That's almost seven times our average lifespan. It shows the brevity of our lives. When I lived there, my hometown generated its own electricity. It was a coal-fired steam generator. And on the plant, they installed this, like a steamboat whistle. That used the steam. Every day at noon, that thing would blast. You could hear it pretty much all over town. Now, I lived about a block and a half from the plant, and they also tied that whistle in to the fire alarm system. So at 2 a.m. when there was a fire and that thing went off, you were awake. No doubt about it. And when it blew, a great big plume of steam came out. But 2 to 3 seconds, all that noise, and then poof, nothing. That's what James says about the extent of our earthly lives. It appears for a short time, and then it's gone. Someone who is 100 years old lived through the Great Depression, the New Deal, the rise of radio, the common use of cars, World War II, the rise of TV, the Korean War, space travel, Vietnam War, the war protest, computer age, cell phones. Massive change in 100 years. And almost nobody lives to be that old. But that's nothing compared to the history of humanity. And it's really nothing compared to the eternality of God. And not only are we here for a short time, very few leave their mark on history. This is going to sound pretty gloomy here, but most of us are going to be entirely forgotten except for a grave marker and a list in a genealogy. Comparatively, we're insignificant. We may be important right now to our family, to our work, to this church body, but in the history of humanity, unless something extremely extraordinary happens, we'll be insignificant and forgotten. Your great-great-grandchildren won't even know your name. That's pretty much the natural course of human life. We're so very limited. Limited in our duration, limited in our understanding, limited in our knowledge of the future. But notice what James says. What is your life? If you're a mist that appears for a little while and vanishes, instead, you ought to say in your planning, if the Lord wills, we'll live and do this or that. Our lives depend entirely on the sovereign providence of God. He has a plan, and he's working it out in human history. What's going to happen tomorrow, next week, next year is known only to God. Let me quote Solomon again, because he summed it up so well. The heart of a man plans his way, but the Lord establishes his steps. Solomon also said in Proverbs 21, the king's heart is a stream of water, and the hand of the Lord turns it wherever he will. So the flow of governments, as one rises and another falls, is in the hand of God. God is sovereign. He knows and has determined what will happen. We don't know, and we should not try and put ourselves in his place. God's plan is hidden from us. A verse that I quote quite often, Deuteronomy 29:29. The secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things revealed belong to us and our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. God tells us what we need to know in his word. All those secret things, what's going to happen tomorrow, next week, everything, that's for him. It's not our place to know the future unless God deigns to reveal an event to us. And we see that in the scriptures, don't we? Sometimes God gives a specific revelation to the king or someone else to do this or to do that. Gives them real guidance. But at other times, he expects his people to use his word, the reasoning powers that he's given them, and to figure it out. Figure out which way to go. Well, what would you consider to be random? Probably throwing dice or flipping a coin are probably two of the most possible, maybe drawing a card out of a deck or a roulette wheel or something like that. We'd see those things as random. Well, you know what? God even controls that. Solomon again. The lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision is from the Lord. God brings it up, heads or tails. There's no real random chance at all. The sovereignty of God doesn't negate human responsibility, however. Peter, on the day of Pentecost, when he was speaking to the crowd there, he said, "Men of Israel, listen to this. Jesus of Nazareth was a man accredited by God to you by miracles, wonders, and signs which God did among you through him, as you yourselves know. This man, get this man was handed over to you by God's set purpose and foreknowledge, and you, with the help of wicked men, put him to death by nailing him to the cross. But God raised him from the dead, freeing him from the agony of death, because it was impossible for death to keep its hold on him." So the trial and crucifixion of Christ was according to what? According to God's set purpose. He had determined to do that, to purchase our redemption. But Peter also says it was done with the help of wicked men, men who were responsible for what they did. Those involved in this were accountable for their wickedness. So we can't get off the hook by appealing to the sovereignty of God. We do what we want, or at least what we think is the thing to do at the moment. But in doing so, we carry out that secret plan of God that we don't know anything about, actually, and we were not coerced by God into doing it. How that all works, we don't know. It's hidden from us. So as you plan, and we must plan, always do so with the sovereignty of God in mind. As you plan your way, but the Lord directs your steps. We must trust him in all of the turns and twists of life. If you think that everything depends on you, then when things do not turn out the way you planned, you'll be angry and devastated and who knows whatever else. The year was 1920. The scene was the examining board for selecting missionaries. Standing before the board was a young man named Oswald Smith. One dream dominated his heart. He wanted to be a missionary. Over and over again, he prayed and prayed. "Lord, I want to go as a missionary for you. Open a door of service for me." Now at last, his prayer would be answered. When the examination was over, the board turned Oswald Smith down. He didn't meet their qualifications. He failed the test. Oswald Smith has set his direction. But now life gave him a detour. What would he do? Well, as Smith prayed, God planted another idea in his heart. If he could not go as a missionary, he would build a church which could send out missionaries. And that is what he did. Oswald Smith pastored the People's Church in Toronto, Canada, which sent out, at least at that time, I don't know if anyone surpassed it or not, at that time, sent out more missionaries than any other church in the world. Smith brought God into the situation, and after God then transformed his detour into a main thoroughfare of service. So we don't have to fear that God is going to change our plan. We probably never would have heard of Oswald Smith had he gone somewhere as a missionary. And maybe you never heard of him before either, but I have. So we're not in ultimate control. When we plan, let's always take into consideration the sovereignty of God. Let's be open to his detours wherever they might go. Let's not promote our plans in selfish pride. No, rather let us humbly plan, acknowledging God's right and authority to change and alter our plans as he sees fit. Let's not rage in anger against him because he promises that his plan for us is for our good. That's hard to grasp and hang on to sometimes, but that's the truth. As sinful finite humans, we don't have the perspective to judge God's actions. Rather, let's cast ourselves on the mercy of God, trusting his promises and grace. The God who sent his Son to suffer and die in order to redeem us will not turn around and ruin us. He really won't. If he goes to all the trouble to send his Son to live and die and rise again in order to redeem us out of sin, he didn't do that in order to trash you halfway down the path. And if the path falls apart and everything is chaos and a mess, God's at work in it. And he's doing it for your good. The God who sent his Son to suffer and die in order to redeem us will not turn around and abandon us. Remember these words that Paul wrote? What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his own Son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also with him graciously give us all things? Now, he's not going to graciously give you every little bitty thing you want. No, that's not what he's promising there. Jesus came and lived and died and rose again for our salvation. Therefore, he can be trusted with the plans that you make. He can be trusted with tomorrow and every day remaining in your life. How does James wrap this up? Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we'll live and do this or that. Let's come to his table.